When you ran into trouble working with Alfonso Davies, and now you want to work with Lorenzo Insigne, it's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello, hello, hello.
Nick, it seems like an era has ended for Canada soccer.
Has it ever? Yeah, you broke this news to me, and of course John Herdman has left the Canadian men's national team and is headed to Toronto FC. So when your workplace is so toxic that TFC's locker room starts to look like a breath of fresh air. Yeah. Interesting one. We'll get to that. Obviously, I want to know all your deep dive thoughts on that. But of course, since we last talked, there was just a small matter of a World Cup being played and won.
That's right. The Women's World Cup has come to a conclusion. It was a really fun tournament. This is one that I was plugged into and had a really good time with. I felt that the group stage and the finals, the knockouts were almost felt like different tournaments, and it was maybe slightly disappointing that both Colombia and Australia didn't make the final. It's great that, you know, Canada, Canada was not the only major part.
It's great
totally
that other big teams crashed out. Yeah.
Yeah, once Germany goes out, it's like, oh, geez,
take it where you can.
That's great. When the U.S. goes out in that first round, it's like, oh.
It was very normalizing to the whole situation. We appreciate it. Thanks, thanks everyone for doing your part.
And it's great to have two teams in the final, England and Spain, that have invested a lot in have domestic leagues that are strong. I just wished maybe it was two country or at least one country that wasn't also a men's soccer world power. You know,
that would have been kind of nice. Jamaica certainly gave everybody a run for their money.
I think that this will be with a lot of these tournaments, I was really worried about expanding the teams because it felt like a FIFA brand cash grab. But I really think that this has been a tournament where it's like, when you watch the World Cup, when you watch a men's World Cup, any World Cup, there are characters, right? Like part of people's anticipations is that the countries form, you know, the different countries form characters. You can expect certain things from different countries. And I feel like this is going to be, if this was people's first times really engaging with the Women's World Cup, I think that that is going to really bode well for the Women's Euro and the Olympics and the future tournaments that are going to play, because this has been a great introduction to lots of different teams up and down the roster of teams that were at this tournament.
I agree. I also think, I know that teams leveling up in terms of their performances happens over time, but it felt like, a lot of teams that were maybe not on the map before or, you know, just kind of seen as perpetual underdogs really stepped out, which raises their profile, but also raises expectations. And, you know, at this stage in the game, I think that it also starts to bring things that really matter, like more advertising money, and even just doing better in a tournament and getting heads turning has a really material impact on a lot of these organizations. So I think that, it doesn't just bode well for the next couple of tournaments. It really felt like just a massive leveling up for the Women's World Cup, but also a number of teams that participated.
That's right. I was on vacation in St. Andrews with my family, came by, and I was just scrabbling for a screen where I could watch this game. I ended up waking up with something like 5 hours of sleep to sit down and and watch this in the final between England and Spain. It was a really, really fun game, I thought. The first half was a little bit more one-sided, but once you had that in Spain comes out with the 1-0 from that, but once you have that the penalty save for Earps, it's like, now it's spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it had, I would say, pretty much all the hallmarks of a good World Cup final. Get a PK call in there, a PK miss, a couple of posts as well. You know, and it, like, I think that it's fair to say through a big chunk of this game, Spain kind of dominated. But it's not like England didn't have chances or show up at all. It just kind of felt like, you know, Spain was always getting to 50-50 balls quicker, just pushing England off the ball in midfield, just kind of one step ahead. But it didn't feel like a totally lopsided game either, if that makes sense.
I would agree with that. And that's what that's like, you know, that second half is like the perfect example of how soccer can be really entertaining when no goals are scored. Because yeah. Everything is happening. You know,
and
I definitely also, and it's definitely, like you said, not the England got somewhere. You know, it wasn't just a domination performance.
That's still their best performance in this arena, right?
That's
and
true.
I don't just mean that specific arena, but I mean silver medal in the World Cup. Like it's great for them. Obviously, it's not what they ultimately had hoped for, but still an achievement.
Other great notes for the game include, after that penalty save, Mary Earps just screaming, "Fuck off!" into the with the camera.
A few times, in fact. I feel like, I just like that we accept that goalkeepers are just allowed to do that. Like, you really can't do that as any other position on the pitch. When goalkeepers is like, you know, that's the tax on having people kick balls at you all the time.
The goal from Carmona was great. It was the ball slides inside the bar post. The penalty, the foul that led to the penalty save was one of those weird ones where it kind of looked like the player was trying to avoid a handball, or player was trying to avoid a foul, and because the player was avoiding the foul, the player committed a handball.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those ones where you're like, it's a bit harsh, but also you kind of have to give it, right? Like it's hard to argue it's not a penalty, but at the same time, you're like, yeah, I don't think she's trying to whack the ball away there, but she kind of does. So you gotta do it. And then
not a great penalty.
No, I feel like the keeper almost like kind of had already committed before the ball had actually left the player's foot, and you know, could have been a redirect, but I'm not saying I want to step up and take a penalty in a World Cup. Like, it's always easy to commentate when somebody misses one, but obviously being there in the moment is very different.
Other people who got whacked, Alex Greenwood took a knee to the head and started bleeding. Like this was a championship wrestling match, and got her head bandaged up like Terry Butcher. It was a tremendous occasion, and it, you know, it could have even used another goal, but at the same time, the tournament had had plenty of shootouts, I think that was for the best.
I mean, they really gave England a chance there at the end, because it was like well over a minute over the stoppage time, and everyone's screaming for them to blow the whistle, and they insist on letting England take the corner, which is fine, but I'm glad that once it was saved, they're just like, no, we've made the point here.
Which was already, in the stoppage time, was already 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I think when we get to MLS, I saw that in our Instagram stories that it's all getting a little much for you.
Yes, turns out that was in fact a glitch. But
oh,
while we're on it, we'll just note that I think that was the message across MLS and will be for most leagues moving forward, is just that they want accurate added time added on. So referees are being encouraged to keep track of the actual time for every single little time-wasting thing, which is why we're seeing such a big increase in those extra minutes, which is why I was ultimately okay with them taking that corner, but gotta end sometime.
I was very amused with Jill Ellis showing up for the final celebrations, like after Vlatko Andonovski has since resigned from his role as U.S. women's national team coach to be like, I'm here, I'm thriving, I'm the defending World Cup champion.
I feel like the World Cup is a little bit like the soccer Oscars, where like, at a certain point, you're allowed to attend and be the center of attention a little bit.
You are not allowed to,
even if you're not nominated.
You are not allowed to attend if you are the person who ran onto the field wearing an anti-Putin T-shirt. And like the Oscars, it seems that the Oscars have had the World Cup has had its big controversial moment, similar to a Will Smith, Chris Brown style incident, where there had already been so much done and said about the fact that there had been concerns over the coach, Jorge Vilda of the Spanish women's team, concerns from some players who felt that he was controlling in some ways. There had been players who had took a stand about this and were off the team in advance of the tournament. There was feelings that the feelings of resentment that the federation and its president Luis Rubiales had stood by the manager, and somehow in the midst of all this, Rubiales was very handsy with many different, if you look in the videos, with a bunch of people on the podium, and grabbed Jenny Hermoso by the face and gave her a big smooch.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we couldn't just have a tournament where men don't do something fucking gross.
So this has gone massive. This has gone massive in a really disappointing and unfortunate way, because, you know, one of the things that we talked about in advance is that, you know, this has been, you know, so frustrating, I'm sure, for everyone involved. We don't necessarily want to go into the sort of like who has issued what statement at what time, because by the time you hear this, there could be another five statements. But suffice to say that Hermoso, through the union, through the players' union, had said that that was not wanted by her. It made her feel bad. It is being investigated as an assault. The president of the Spanish of the RFEF is suspended by FIFA, pending an ethics investigation. He's, you know, it looked like he was going to resign, and then he did this wild speech saying that he wasn't going to. There's a lot here that is immensely frustrating and really awful for the player involved and people who have been through that situation. And that's kind of what I have been thinking of and that
it's drawn attention away from what should be a fucking monumental celebratory moment for Spain.
Yeah, this is their ascension.
Women's team.
This is their ascension to being a major power in the soccer world, except that they couldn't avoid. They somehow, after all this stuff, still ended up winning because of their players. That they, yeah. You know, they somehow couldn't even avoid you know, ruining the
moment of victory. And now instead we're talking about this asshole.
It is very, I think that what I think about in terms of the context that a lot of, you know, that has happened in North American soccer and in women's soccer, you know, in many places around the world, is that we've had, over the last couple of years, we have had these issues of coaches being controlling or of people being inappropriate with female players. And a lot of this has required investigations and you know, independent studies. And we had the Yates report in NWSL, which, yeah, you know, one of the findings of that was that, you know, that we were talking about culture that goes beyond the NWSL. And here we had it out in the open on international television. And it was sickening. The press conference was sickening. It has been great to see who people in leagues around the world speak in support. But it is. There's also been other people that haven't. You know, Jordi Alba just quit the Spanish national team, and his press release said it had nothing to do with Rubiales. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, is that exactly as you said, like, I mean, it can be there literally in front of people's eyes, and you're still going to get, I hope, dwindling minority, but a pretty big chunk of people that are just like, what are you talking about? And as ever, I think that's been the argument, right? Is it's not so much like I think we sometimes think there's this like group of people who don't think that sexual assault is as common as it actually is, but it's also a large number of people that don't understand what sexual assault is.
That's
and
right.
So they, you know, and obviously that is something that is systemic, and it's cultural, and it's especially cultural in this context as well. And unfortunately, you know, Spain's moment of hopefully reckoning with some of this is now overshadowing again what could be a brilliant step forward and a real moment for the women's team, but just further highlights exactly what everybody has been talking about, that this is just something that is so normalized and so rotten to the core that people feel like they can get away with it on television in front of millions and millions and millions of people. It's, yeah, all bad.
So Jenny Contigo, I hope that by the time people hear this, I hope something more is the, you know, the
They stopped protecting some bum fluff dude and like can actually focus on the task at hand.
They cannot move past this fast enough. And I am sorry to Jenny Hermoso, and I'm sorry to everybody who is, tangentially affected by this, and just hope that we can move into that. Hopefully this moment can bring about some change.
Yeah. Hear, hear. So that's the Women's World Cup. We also, of course, had League's Cup wrap up.
Oh, so there was one more coaching change related to the World Cup and slightly related to the situation. Vera Powell, it was announced today on the 29th that Vera Powell is not coming back to Ireland. They are not renewing her contract. They had a decent tournament, but during the preparations of the tournament, the Athletic posted a investigation of alleged bullying and comments about players' weight and whatnot in the lead up to that tournament. And I know there are a lot of people that are very happy that she's not going to be returning.
Yeah.
So there's that. It feels like this whole thing, we are at the point of the summer that feels like it's just manager swap.
Yeah.
Do you want to go to League's Cup first, or do you want to talk Herbin?
Good question. Let's just do Herdman. I mean, I feel like League's Cup, there's not a lot to say. We all know what happened. Messi FC takes it all. So let's talk Herdman, and we'll get to League's Cup when we get to League's Cup.
So it has the Herdman thing has deruled, I think, over the last couple of days. It was initially reported in sort of two halves. That there had been the first that he was leaving Canada, and then it was announced that he was going to Toronto. This has been there's a lot for, you know, the for the three parties at hand here: Canada, Herdman, and TFC. This all means, I think, something different for all of them. John yeah. Herdman is. Coach is somebody who wanted to grow his career as a coach. He took the opportunity to move from the women's national team to the men's national team because he knew that he had built up that essentially this was his shot at doing it. And there would never be a better opportunity for him to further his career into the, and get this, you know, sort of achieve what his dreams were than doing it at that time. And by all accounts, he did a great job with the men's national team in terms of, you know, bringing them belief. I get some of this from reading Sinclair's biography, but Christine Sinclair's autobiography, that she feels that he did the same stuff that he did to help, you know, install belief in the women's national team with the men's national team, which led to their qualification.
Yeah.
This is now his opportunity. Joshua Cloak of The Athletic reported that after what happened with the end of the Nations League, that he began to, perhaps his messages were not getting through as to everyone as well as they had in the past or what have you. Kind of whether. Before we get more into that, I guess just to say that he decided, you know, at that time, maybe I should, you know, ask around if there are any opportunities available. And there were opportunities available at TFC, it turned out, who have also been having a tough time bringing their team together. And they decided that they wanted to get him. I think that the fact that some of these stories are coming out about who was unhappy with whom tells the story that this is not 100% a one-sided move in terms of somebody trying to move up. I don't know that Canada men's national team to TFC is necessarily a vertical move, maybe a diagonal move, a lateral move.
I mean, I think given, I feel like Herdman today addressing it, you know, in a very diplomatic but not so subtle way, kind of threw Canada soccer under the bus, but also pointed out, like, you're not doing it every day with a national team. They're not players that you're working with every day. You're working in these little bit, you know, bite-sized pieces, and has been, as he pointed out, since he started with the women's national team. So it's been a long time of doing the national team coaching job, and really wanting to test himself in, you know, that club culture. So I buy that at face value. I think, that seems to sort of make the most sense. And, you know, in Canada soccer is like the worst kept secret in international football, that it's just a shitty organization from top to bottom. I'm sure that there are some good people within it, but it's a train wreck, right? Like, it's just, there's always something going on. It certainly seems like a difficult operation to, you know, have success in. But that being said, it's not like TFC's front office is And that's to say nothing of some of the players you're inheriting. I mean, the player thing, I think, is like, that just comes with the territory, right? It doesn't matter which club you go to, you're going to be dealing with, you know, stars of some caliber or egos without the talent sometimes. But, yeah, I don't know. I actually, in some ways, I think that this is maybe a bit more of a gamble for TFC than anyone.
That's a good point.
Like, and take nothing away from John Herdman. I like his approach. He's obviously, his success with our national program speaks for itself. And I wish him nothing but success. But, you know, I'm kind of 50-50 on it. Because, you know, obviously, Bob Bradley was the very experienced MLS coach that was supposed to come in and get them back on track to being champions. Clearly, that did not work out for a number of reasons, some of which were outside of Bob Bradley's control. But remember, like, he also lost his job at LAFC. Like, there's something about Bob Bradley's coaching recently that's not bringing success to MLS clubs. So I guess why not try somebody totally different? But things are so clearly just so off at TFC right now. Insigne reportedly cussed out the entire team and Terry Dunfield and left practice early last week. Apparently, that's not the first time he's done that. Like, that's what you're walking into. Regardless of how much time is left on Insigne's and Bernadeschi's contract, it just smells like they're going to have to eat the cost of those some way, somehow. I mean, they already have. They're not getting the product they need out of their two stars. The two stars don't seem to really want to be there. So whether they buy them out or they sell them at a loss or whatever it is, I don't think either of them have a long-term future at TFC. Sean Johnson's out long-term after a hand fracture. Like, this is a team that we used to talk about in terms of rebuilds, and then finally they tore it all down and rebuilt it into a winning team. They've torn it down once since then. It's gonna get torn down again. So I guess I feel like this is a kind of a bit of a, I don't know what the right metaphor is, but like, you're just putting all your chips on John Herdman and being like, I don't know, fucking nothing else worked. And I think you could do a lot worse than John Herdman for a case like that. But to your point about like, who's getting what out of it, in some ways it feels like kind of a win for everybody, and also everybody's maybe getting possibly a bit screwed too.
I definitely agree with that.
It possibly cancels out to just like, so maybe it's the right thing. If nobody's really happy, but everybody's happier than they were, don't we call that compromise? I don't know. I feel like I'm not giving John Herdman enough credit here. I expect that he will be able to do something with TFC. He just has a different approach to players. And I'm interested to see how he'll rebuild a squad. But it feels not unrisky, right?
Here's where I'm skeptical about Herdman is that let's recognize what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are. People really felt that he was a great motivator and that he made his last two teams believe in themselves. They wondered whether or not he was always 100% there tactically. Lots of coaches are like that. But I would say that specifically, if you are saying because he did these two things with these two teams, he'll be able to do the same thing with TFC, which seems to be what TFC thinks, that it's a different situation to take a team of, you know, young players or players that don't necessarily, like a team that is perennially disregarded, or players that are on the cusp of becoming stars and allowing them to fully believe that they can take on that identity and that they can step into the roles that they've been given. It's easier to bring a team together that way and to increase cohesion and to try and, you know, build a unit when it's like, people don't, you know, I know everybody says this or this or this about Canadian players or whatever, but we're going to prove them wrong or whatever. That works when you have, you know, maybe one or two stars that are you know, younger or that are, you know, in the case of Sinclair, like a somebody who can be a leader, but is also not necessarily like known to have an ego.
I think it's easier to get through to Cavallini than Bernadeschi is what I'm hearing.
I think a little bit. It's probably easier.
I don't disagree.
It's probably easier than Insigne. Like you can't pull the same, like, people don't believe in us, but we're going to prove them wrong with somebody who won the World Cup. Or was in the World Cup, sorry, was in a major tournament final.
Yeah. Yeah, if Herdman has the brass to just fucking clear house and rebuild a club around a culture and get some... I mean, clearly, Toronto has been one of the worst teams for signings since their changeover in soccer operations, and certainly before that initial changeover anyway. You know, they can't develop players through their youth system particularly well. They seem to, when they do have promising young talents, they always end up losing them. And they consistently get it wrong in terms of the personalities they bring in. So I'm interested on that side of things, to your point about Herdman's strength in the person management. I think it's less about dealing with what's there. Because Terry Denfield will be in charge for the next 5 matches still. This is really a next season thing. So I think Herdman's going to be able to take a good long look at a distance, evaluate further, and make his decisions and set his targets. And I'm really curious to see what that will be. But I hear you on the tactical side. I mean, obviously, Canada has sputtered in that part, and we've talked about their defensive lapses, and you certainly feel like that same staff heading TFC, you know, defensively, this is an incredibly soft team. So it'll be interesting to see how that all takes shape. But you have to think it only improves the culture from here. Like it would be hard to make worse. On that note, I kind of want to talk about New England, because maybe that's our transition back into MLS stuff is, you know, speaking of teams that are in need of a teardown or just in need of something, New England was just doing so well this season. They had a lot of discipline issues in the League's Cup. Carl's Heel was suspended for a big chunk of it. They've had injury issues. And then, sort of like, I think it was about halfway through the League's Cup, Bruce Arena was placed on administrative leave for apparently making some kind of inappropriate comments at some point. And we haven't really heard anything since. And that was a few weeks ago now.
Nobody knows. Nobody, like, everybody that you ask that has anything to do with the team says, I didn't hear it.
Yeah, yeah. And then heap onto that, Brandon Bye is out for the rest of the season. He just had ACL surgery. Ivicic is off to Chelsea, who paid like seven. Sorry, guys. I meant Petrovic here. This is what happens when you watch a bunch of highlights and record during the evening. Anyway, Petrovic is the player I'm referring to, not Ivicic. I figure it out later, but just thought I'd chime in here. $17.5 million for him, just fucking throwing money at New England for him. Okay, obviously, getting that kind of cash to this team is fantastic. But Ivicic is, you know, I think clearly the best goalkeeper in MLS this season. And all of a sudden, a team that seemed to have all the pieces and were really looking like MLS Cup contenders have a interim coach and a head coach under investigation. Have lost two of their big stars and are coming out of a League's Cup that was frankly pretty disappointing on most fronts from them. So that's kind of a question mark of a team for me coming back to MLS action is, you know, New England carved themselves out a place in sort of second, third place territory, and they're still in third, but it, you know, can a team sustain itself through that many changes at this point in the season? Like, you've just crashed out of a League's Cup, a new tournament, you've lost players, and now you're facing the business end of the season. and not in an uncomfortable position, but Orlando, Columbus, Atlanta, Nashville, Montreal, all of those teams looked much better in League's Cup and have looked much better since MLS has returned. That's one I'm watching. Is can New England's strength keep them where they are? Or, you know, even if they still make it into the playoffs, which I think is likely at this point, how do you sustain that with just so many changes and so much bad vibes over the team?
First of all, if I'm a an aspiring a goalkeeper who has dreams of playing in the Premier League, I guess I got to go to New England because they had Matt Turner picked up, and then they had Ivicic going. That shows, and I mean, I get at the very least good scouting, but I definitely agree with you that this has added to this strange vibe that exists right now, where, you know, nobody can say what's happening with the arena. You have this transfer. So the match they have against Montreal comes on the 26th. So when is the transfer? When do they have the transfer for Ivicic? It's the 26th. It's the same. For Georgi Petrovic. It's the same day. So they this is announced during the. It feels very similar in some situations to like the stomach dropping around the Zeller Ryan transfer from Columbus, where it's like, sorry, what happened? We're playing today. We've got a game today. We've got to put in our backup and in any backup, of course. Earl Edwards Jr. has, on commentary, they were like, oh, it might be, you know, a unique situation for him, but he's played 24 games. He's played in the league. That being said, it was like just the strange situation of like having to make that change the same day, waking up in the morning with a different goalkeeper than the one that you had at the end.
Yeah, it's a lot. Also, Ivicic is still at Portland, just if folks were head scratcher, he's still there. I also think he's great. I remember now when I was taking notes, I'm like, I don't think it's Ivicic, but forgot to go back and correct there. Elsewhere, as we kind of take this thing home here and catch people up, actually, we haven't had all that many coaching changes in MLS this season. I have started us a little tracker in our Google Docs, so we can keep track of it. But Gio Savarese, after a big blowout to Houston and an early League's Cup exit, is no longer. He is out at Portland. They have their interim coach in place now. And just lost to the Whitecaps 3-2. So, another team that sort of... I mean, obviously Portland has really struggled this season, but for a team that has consistently competed and really shown to be a difficult foe, now all of a sudden facing big changes again. Although they seem to be like they had Porter for a while, then they had Savarese for a while, so they kind of like the longer tenured coaches, it seems.
Only
the fifth coach firing of this season, which I was surprised by.
I have a this is maybe slanderous to somebody. I don't know if it's more slanderous to Savarese or to Bob Bradley, but I think that one of the things that like is interesting about that move is if you think about it, throughout the whole time he was always a strong personality, but it almost feels like him and Bob Bradley fit the role of like strong coach guy, you know, forceful. They have some knowledge of the game. They have some, you know, belief in how they want sides to play. They're able to give, you know, strong interviews. And then the tenure in people like them. And there's lots of positives there, and you then look back and you realize, what did we get? We got an MLS is back tournament.
Yeah.
Out of that whole tenure. And I don't know, I'm not necessarily saying that it was all terrible the whole time, but it, like...
They made the playoffs in that time.
But it's like, I think that was one of the ones where it's like, I think that people talked about him as being a pretty major guy, and now that it's over, I think that we can look back and wonder, you know, reputationally versus delivery, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I always thought that, you know, as a coach, he seemed to be able to get something out of his players, and he was a coach that could develop younger players and get more out of them. But Portland just seems to have hit a rough moment where they've got, you know, obviously, you know, with their Diego Valeri, their best ever player, leaving in that moment, still having Blanco, but his fitness not fully there all the time. Obviously just a swath of injuries this season, but I think it is fair to say over the 5 years, like, not notable, but it wasn't really an improvement over the Caleb Porter side, obviously. So there'll be another team in transition to watch. Obviously, speaking of teams in transitions, there's been a ton of transfers because the secondary window closed in August at some time. Notable ones to me, obviously, Zelarayan headed to the Saudi Pro League. Just hate it. He's just been such a fun player to watch and to talk about. But if you have to lose him and you bring in Diego Rossi as consolation, I feel like you could do worse.
That helps.
That definitely softens the blow. I don't think it softens the blow as much as getting Rudy Camacho, which Columbus also picked up. Another favorite of ours to talk about. But, you know, also not nothing. Good bit of business from Columbus at a really important time. We also, last show, we knew that Julian Gressel had left the Whitecaps. The Whitecaps have since added Sam Adekube and Richie Larea. I think two great signings. It makes a lot of sense. It's a good bit of business. And I think it also was wise to, even in the signing, be like, this does not replace Gressel. This is us improving with bringing in two additional players who will strengthen our roster. And I think that's the right call to make, as those two players, you know, gel with the team.
Yeah, because neither one of them can be Gressel exactly, but as important as he was and as helpful as he was, what worked for the team in the Magic in Portland, I think one of the strongest parts is still the connection between Ryan Gauld and Brian White. We also saw Schopf contributing to some of the service. We saw Adekube contributing in the lead up. In that 3-2 match against Portland, I think that things are working, and it's better, like you said, not as a replacement, to be like, this is just a different team with these two in it. You know, it may not be exactly the same thing where we need to rely on somebody for service in the same way. We can move the ball differently if we have those are two great players, and I'm very happy to have Sam Adekube back, because I think that he, you know, he was a product of the Whitecaps Academy, but I don't know that he ever got, like, the proper shake with the first team that he deserved.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he just needed a coach that knew what he could do. I think at the time, the way our roster was, it might have made sense to move him on, and he's obviously developed incredibly well. But to bring in a player that knows our system, you know, bringing in Larea as well, I feel like the theme I saw in this transfer window, of course, there was the theme of spending just boatloads of money on big name players, but also that MLS teams still see a lot of value in paying a premium to bring MLS experience back to MLS. Diego Rossi, what's the other one I'm missing here? Bringing Sam Adekube back. I mean, again, I know not a huge signing. New York City FC, I believe they brought Maxi Morales back.
Oh, that's nice.
I think I have that right. I was going to double check that before the show. Yes. Whew. Did get it right. Yeah, I think that that's just a note, something to keep an eye on. The MLS clubs are willing to pay big dollars for somebody that's already played in the league. We saw some interesting interleague movement. Diego Fagundes went from Austin to Galaxy in exchange for Memo Rodriguez and money. Atlanta United signed like three forwards. They've been obviously doing pretty good recently as well. And Taxi Funtis was finally terminated at DC United.
Bye.
Bye. And I'm glad that that's the last time we have to talk about him, but I figured we should at least mark the moment and say bye.
That's right. Yeah, Atlanta had the 4-0 against Nashville, who definitely did not look like they, you know, it's like, oh, how are they going to react coming out of the losing the Leafs Cup final? Bad.
Poorly. Yeah. Poor Nashville, man. I still think they're great, and they certainly, they really gave Inter Miami a run for their money. And it's, truly, we are in the next era of, it's way more fun to hate on Inter Miami now that they're incredible. I think the final note here that I just wanted to say as we kind of lead back into the next game week is, you know, before League's Cup, I was all on my high horse about how difficult it would be for Inter Miami to make the playoffs. And I'm just going to say it here and now. I think they're going to do it. And if they do, they have every possible chance of winning MLS Cup. I'm not saying they're the most likely team to win MLS Cup this season, but after seeing League's Cup, I was like, it's lights out, isn't it? It's apparently a really big impact to sign the best player to play the game and his friends.
It's like a reality warping field.
Yeah, like apparently that makes you suddenly good overnight. But across the board, their goalkeeper has been outstanding. Robert Taylor apparently just has come out of nowhere and has been great. Every single player on that team has risen well above their levels. And it, you know, as frustrating as it is for, I don't think many of us love a team that can just go out and, you know, buy a team overnight and find success like this. Look, if you can do it, we'd all do it. They did it. And now we are just watching Miami dominate. Nashville pushed them. Orlando gave them something to think about. Dallas asked questions. But, like, from what I've seen so far, from what we've all seen, it's pretty hard to argue. The fact that overnight the expectations shifted from, like, well, maybe Inter Miami will make the playoffs. I think people are going to be pretty disappointed now if they don't, and actually quite surprised. I'd be surprised if they don't.
It bums me out a little, to be honest.
It does. It's hard, right? And like I've been a lifelong Messi fan too, but it does still bum me out a little bit that like just overnight, the shittiest team in the league is suddenly the best.
If you happen to buy a lot of players,
here we are.
It bothered me when I saw graphics talking about the number of trophies Messi has won in his career, because it feels like I'm almost happier to see them win the U.S. Open Cup, because that's a real competition and not just something that has been started this year. It felt my detection and resistance for MLS branding opportunities got worse the longer the League's Cup went and centered around this concept. Of course, it's entertaining to watch. I almost found, like, when I was reading about MLS on Twitter versus when I was doing my notes for the show, that I was, like, just like relieved to watch highlights of a match between two non-Inter Miami MLS clubs because I'm like, oh my god, the league. It's not like the league has totally, you know, collapsed overnight or anything. It is. It's been, you know, I hope that that it's good.
There still are other teams.
I hope that it's good in the long run. There has been some criticism of. I don't necessarily think that. I guess the best way to put it is I don't think that the defenses that are playing Inter Miami are at their best. You know, is that because of? Is that just because he's so good that he makes everybody else look like fools? Is that because of pressure in the moment? It's challenging to say, but it hasn't looked. There's been, at times it's just like outrageous to think about. At times you wonder, you know, could you have maybe marked him a little more?
Or at all in some cases. Or at all.
But you can't, but at the same time, as you said, it's like, you know, there's people around the world have tried forever. It's not like I could do any, it's not like anybody could do any better. It's just, what the distortion field around Miami is makes me feel all kinds of ways. Sometimes I
apparently
sometimes I'm amused by it. Sometimes I laugh at it. Sometimes I'm bummed out by it. Sometimes I'm impressed. I hope it doesn't just totally shift all the narratives. I guess it depends on which match you're listening to.
Whether I think or
not
it's hard.
They have the good commentary team or not.
If it makes you sleep at night any better, I just will call to mind here, like, this is a, at most, this is a 2-year run for Inter Miami. And they may well dominate and win everything. But they could also very quickly turn into LA Galaxy and or Toronto FC and just as quickly go back to sucking. Because they're not going to have Messi forever.
That's true.
Long may he run. However, you know, if they don't do it this year, they will certainly do it next year. And that's going to be probably their shot at it before all these players move on or hang them up. So there is a limited window to make it happen in. That's true. And Messi, I'm sure, could still dance around most MLS defenses at 50. So he could keep this thing going for a while yet. But it also, you know, you can quickly also become a victim of your own success. And in a league like MLS, as we've seen with big teams, you also get rated. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, rating Messi or Busquets off of Inter Miami, but you see all these other talented players they have, and it can quickly become a revolving door.
That's true.
So if that helps balance it out, I don't think in the near term it's going to make an ounce of difference to Inter Miami's fortunes, but it can be, as a long-term thing, I'd say this is Miami's moment, but it's not going to last.
Maybe in a month or two it'll feel more tolerable in terms of people. In terms of the very least, just when it's like I could take it with a sensible chuckle if I then didn't hear the commentators be like, "Wow, it's so amazing, this transformation." Is it amazing? Yeah. Is it surprising? Is it, you know, impressive? It's explainable to me. it doesn't take a lot of time to think about why.
It is happening. Well, here's this for your redemption story. Tomorrow night, Nashville will get a chance to rewrite the record as they face Inter Miami again. This time in regular season, so
I have to admit, were eliminated at any stage I just hope it's not a negative to national season. If you were eliminated from Leafs Cup at any stage before the final, I've already forgotten about it. I don't. it's like, do I look at any teams' performance and be like, wow, or like does anything stick out to me specifically as being like, wow, that was disappointing? This tournament could be important. It could be MLS's back in terms of the future of things, and I think past a certain point, the most important thing is maintaining your form from before. if you missed, if you got a vacation and used that to better your season, I wouldn't have said you should lose on purpose, but I'm not going to look back at a team that left on the group stage and be like, oh wow, what a blow to your season. How disappointing. This was weird. The team yeah. the team at the bottom, no Mexican team made the final, and the team at the bottom of MLS won the tournament. It was weird.
And now they all have to play each other in quick succession. That's right. Again, because so many MLS teams.
Here's a positive.
Anyway,
though.
With all that being said, where
out of all this, Tata Martino said today that he's been told that they are looking into finally adapting the MLS schedule to international breaks.
All it took was bringing Messi in.
That would be a pretty big bet. That would be something MLS people have been yelling at MLS to do for years, and yeah. Something I think that would be no doubt a positive if that came through as an actual change. And certainly, if you've got a player in the league who increases ticket prices by a decimal place.
Yeah. We can dare to dream. On that note, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at Team Bates. Don't worry about what site that is or not. You can find me on a bunch of other stuff. On Threads is Team Batesy. Team Bates at mastodon.social. And just team-bates.com and in the newspaper. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at That's So MLS on the Instagrams, and you can also find this podcast at thatsomls.com, as well as on Apple Podcasts and all the other podcast platforms. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
Until we speak to you next, as Jake Nowinski did in the Orlando St. Louis game, don't get sent off.
Womp, womp.
Very good. Thank you so much.